Thinking to himself, Arjuna came back from the city of the Yadavs. Tampadayor Nipati Tum Ayatum Purva Aturam Adova Dhanam Adhum Pujam Tum Nayanaba Dhur Nayanaba Dhur. When he bowed at his feet, the king saw that his dejection was unprecedented. His head was down and tears glided from his lotus eyes. Vilokyo Dvijan Vribaya Vichayam Anujam Nitam Nipa Tumki Smashim Madhye Sam Smaram Naraduram. Seeing Arjuna pale due to heartfelt anxieties, the king, remembering the indications of the sage Narada, questioned him in the midst of things. Yudhishthira Vatsya Kaschid Anartha Purna Kuham Na Svajana Shukam Ashtapur Madhu Bodhya Vishahara Satyatam Vahadam. Maharaj Yudhishthira said, my dear king, my dear brother, please tell me whether our friends and relatives such as Madhu, Bodhya, Dasaha, Arha, Satvata, Angata, and the members of the Yadu family are all passing their days in happiness. Suryo Matat Maha Kachit Svastyas He Vatya Marisha Kachitra Sandra Kachit In his is my respectful grandfather Surya Sena in a happy mood? And are my maternal uncle Vasudev and his younger brothers all doing well? Saptasva Sharastat Kaptino Matulaniya Sahamaja Ashate Shashmisha Shmeyam Devaki Kramita Swamam. His seven wives, headed by Devaki, are all sisters. Are they and their sons and daughters-in-law all happy? Paschitmaja Huka Vakti Asat Putra Shakanja Rudika Shashito Kudu Jayanta Vadasharana Asate Kushalam Paschit Yecha Shakti Vidyabaya Paschit Aste Shikam Vamo Bhagavan Sakhan Vahu. Ugrasena, whose son was the mischievous Kamsa, and his younger brother still living? Are Vibhika and his son Kutavarma happy? Are Arjuna, Jayanta, Veda, Sharana, and Sukhrujit all happy? How is following the personality of Godhead and the protector of the universe? Hastinapur, the capital of the Pandavas, was situated somewhere near present New Delhi. And the kingdom of Ugrasena was situated in Mathura. While returning to Delhi from Dwarka, Arjuna must have visited the city of Mathura, and therefore the inquiry about the king of Mathura is valid. Amongst various names of the relatives, the name of Rama, or Balaram, the eldest brother of Lord Krishna, is added with the words, the personality of Godhead. Because Lord Balaram is the immediate expansion of Vishnu Tattva as Prakash Vigraha, excuse me, of Lord Krishna. The Supreme Lord, although one without a second, expands himself as many other living beings. The Vishnu Tattva living beings are expansions of the Supreme Lord, and all of them are qualitatively and quantitatively equal with the Lord. But expansions of the Jiva Shakti, the category of the ordinary living beings who are not equal to the Lord. One who considers the Jiva Shakti and the Vishnu Shakti to be on an equal level is considered a condemned soul of this world. Sri Rama, or Balaram, is the protector of the devotees. Baladev acts as the spiritual master of all devotees, and by his causeless mercy, the fallen souls are delivered. Sri Baladev appeared as Sri Nityananda Prabhu during the advent of Lord Chaitanya, and the great Lord Nityananda Prabhu exhibited his causeless mercy by delivering a pair of fallen souls, extremely not fallen, extremely fallen souls named Jagaya Madai. Therefore, it is particularly mentioned herein that Balaram is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. By his divine grace only, one can approach the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, and thus Sri Balaram is the mercy incarnation of the Lord, manifest as the spiritual master, the savior of the pure devotees. It's very nice reading this purport that we have all of these personalities right here on our altar. Om Gyana Timarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Shaksuhun Manitam Minatasmai Sri Kudubi Namaha Mukam Karuti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayati Girim Yakripa Tamaham Vande Sri Gurum Dinitarinam Panchakapaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vahiva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Sridharadha Sri Vasari Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So here in these eight verses today, we only have one verse with a purport by Srila Prabhupada. I think it's worth noting for the record, it would be a mistake to think or to assume that since Prabhupada didn't speak or didn't write anything on these other verses, that those verses aren't so important. There is no unimportant verse in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. All the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam carry within them the essence of the instructions and guidance of the entire Bhagavatam itself. The issue is whether we have the spiritual vision to see this, whether we have the spiritual understanding to appreciate this point. So with that thought in mind, let's take a look at the verses we have before us today here. What we're seeing in these verses is an analysis by a world leader, and we're seeing things through the window of his state of mind. And we already know from previous chapters and previous verses that Yudhishthira was concerned greatly about the welfare of all the citizens who are under his care. This is the actual ideal example of leader. Now, he wasn't placed in this position, as Prabhupada would say, by dogs electing another big dog to lead them. He was placed in this position by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna himself. Significant difference in the way that the role of leadership for the guidance of the entire world has been taken here. Krishna, who's unlike other world leaders that we're familiar with, and even other leaders in certain parts of the Bhagavatam itself, he has our best interest in mind. That's the greatest concern of his, is the best interest of his devotees. Of not only his devotees, but all living entities. As Prabhupada says, he appears to be partial, but in reality, it's not partiality. And then Prabhupada goes on to say, just as if there is a fire and you can only save one child, when you save your own child, no one will say, oh, you only saved your child, you didn't save other child. So, in this way, Krishna has the best interest of all living entities. As it says in the Bhagavad Gita, 5th chapter, verse 29, Sudridam Sarva Bhutanam. He's the benefactor of all living beings. Not just his own family, not just his own socioeconomic, political group, not even just the humans, but of all living beings, Sarva Bhutanam. So this is an important point that Prabhupada repeatedly makes in many, many different lectures, that this concern for all living beings is the real understanding of how to have compassion on others. You know, there's one of these things on the internet going around, says, how does it say it? It says, you're concerned enough about the fish to give up using straws, but not to give up eating them. So misplaced understandings about the welfare of other living entities, if they're not guided by the proper understanding, if they're not guided by the reality of the spiritual vision of all living entities, just like the, here again, the Bhagavad Gita says, the humble sage sees with equal vision, you know, the cow, the Brahmin, the dog eater, the elephant, all these different individual types of beings, of bodies, 8,400,000 to be exact, sees the soul in each one, sees the spiritual spark there, and therefore has equal respect for all of them. This doesn't mean foolishly, you know, brings the dog into the temple, you know, but it means that he regards them all as having the Supreme Personality of Godhead present in their heart. So this is the role, this type of vision, this is the role that Yudhishthira has been brought forward to fulfill, and why he was in that position, because he had that ability, because of the guidance he received, and because of his dear friendship with Lord Krishna. So therefore, it is worth our examining Yudhishthira's reflections, his state of mind, the concerns that he had for what was going on. I mean, it is, after all, what great historians do, even not so great historians, but it's what they do. They write unlimited books and they look at great historical figures and examine how they did something, why they did something, what their thoughts were as they were executing that. You know, endless books about endless personalities throughout time have been written, and that's what's actually happening here. But again, not from the mundane, limited vision of a conditioned soul, but by Srila Vyasadeva himself. So in this case, a history worth reading, a history worth examining. So here in text 22, we see the continuation of the observance of Yudhishthira Maharaj of the various signs of inauspiciousness that he is certain are showing a certain calamity is headed their way. It's just like right now, we've got this so-called Hurricane Elsa, you know, headed up our, of course, these hurricanes all peter out before they get to us, but at any rate, so there's signs indicating, oh, we've got this big storm coming, so everyone prepares for it. Everyone understands this indicates this and that and this kind of weather pattern, and therefore we have to, you know, make arrangements in this manner. So in the same way here, Yudhishthira is seeing certain signs of inauspiciousness, which have all been listed in the various previous verses, one by one, and of which many of them we see commonly present in our modern society. And so he thinks to himself, what can this mean? Chintayasya. Thinking to himself about these points. So he's absorbed as a leader, seeing these inauspicious signs, thinking of the impact they're going to have on people at large. This is quite suitable. And at this point, in his process of thinking, is when Arjuna returns to the kingdom. We've all seen this in movies or read it in books. Right at the key point, the lead character comes in and changes everything or confirms what's going on or gives some, you know, impact that's going to change the direction of it. And that's what's happening here. Arjuna is entering into the scene as Yudhishthira is contemplating this mood of a change of direction in the world, and Arjuna's entrance, and as pointed out in this next verse, manner of entrance confirms all that. So that's text 23. So first of all, what does Arjuna do when he enters? Yudhishthira is not only his brother, but a close brother, not one that there's some distance. You know, many times in our modern society, we have issues with family members. It's not a closeness, you know, brothers, sisters, between parents and children, you know, where there's not that intimacy still shared. But that's not the case here. Arjuna and Yudhishthira are very close, very intimate in there. But nonetheless, when Arjuna comes in, out of proper etiquette, he offers obeisances. Now, in some understandings, obeisances means simply to fold the hands, pranam, in front of the heart, and nod the head. This is bowing down, dandavats, as we would call them. This is appropriate because of the position that Yudhishthira holds, and because this is in front of an assembly. And Arjuna is, after all, an acharya in how one should treat the king. Okay, the king's my brother. I can slap him on the back and seal prasadam him off his plate and play jokes on him, hide his shoes, pull on his hair, whatever. But in this circumstance, the king is my brother and I'm showing proper respect to him so that everyone understands his position. So he bows down like this. This is actually a traditional Vedic culture. Even if your brother is not the king, the eldest brother in the family is always given that great respect. Now what does Yudhishthira see when Arjuna comes in? Ayatta Purvam, something unprecedented. Now, if we turn to our friend Sri Webster, what does he say about this word unprecedented? It means without previous instance, something that never before has been known or experienced. And what is that unprecedented thing? That thing is that Arjuna, the greatest of heroes, the unconquerable, the boldest of the warriors who's always successful, is in a mood of dejection. As if there were no value in anything, no purpose in anything. His head is bowed, and even more so, api bindum nayana abjayo. Tears were coming from his lotus eyes. Arjuna, the greatest of warriors, crying. This is quite unheard of. How is it possible? So seeing this unprecedented action, Yudhishthira then remembers what Narada had said. Of course, here again, Narada is in the middle of the picture. Narada is always in the middle of everything. We've mentioned this many times. You can go to any part of the Bhagavatam and there's Narada, either instructing or stirring things up or, you know, bringing things about much quicker. This is Narada's eternal pastime, to promote Krishna consciousness in some way or another by speaking it or pushing people forward or, you know, making the time events shorter than they might be. Oh no, that's too long. We got to speed this up, you know. So this is all the instructions that Narada has given. And Yudhishthira's remembering these instructions now because he sees, here's one of the concerns right here, that Arjuna is crying, feeling dejected. How is this possible? And we move on to text 24. In any normal circumstance of kingly and brotherly execution of duties and all, such situations may be discussed privately. You know, we've all seen this situation or heard about, you know, the king sends everyone out so that he can talk confidentially with his prime minister. Or, you know, the president says, all right, give us the room, indicating all the rest of you leave, I've got to have a private talk with this individual. So, but that's not taking place here. Certainly these are confidential matters that we're going to find out are very pressing for them personally, what to speak of universally. But no, it's noted with importance in this verse, Prichati sma marheshu hit. In front of friends, in front of others, Yudhishthira decides to question Arjuna as to what's going on. So why is he doing this in this manner? What's the purpose here? So there's actually two reasons. One is that he sees udvigna, that Arjuna's filled with anxiety. Arjuna, filled with anxiety. Anxiety is usually indicative of not being settled or, you know, not having a clear idea what the future is going to hold or, you know, here again, Arjuna, this isn't his nature. This isn't what he's known for. So clearly, this is indicative that something is wrong. Something is not correct in the way that they have known things to exist for some time now. So this is the first reason. that Yudhishthira feels that this is a public discussion. This may be something, but this is for everyone to hear. And now Yudhishthira also already has an idea from this previous verse of what he assumes to be the circumstance. Remember the previous verse, he mentioned that this must mean Krishna's leaving. And so he understands that this information is beneficial for everyone, and that the conversation he's about to have confirmed from Arjuna should be public knowledge. After all, in any proper government, there are no secret talks. I mean, there may be things that are kept quiet until they're able to be presented, but this particular circumstance, Yudhishthira clearly understands both from a spiritual perspective of their relationship with Krishna and from a managerial perspective as a leader, that this information that is about to change the course of the direction of the entire world, because keep in mind, time-wise, universal time-wise, we're entering into the Kali Yuga period. We're on that cusp. Things are about to change. So Yudhishthira understands this is an important point that should be brought out. We move on to text 25. So he begins to question. And one by one, he inquires about the different family members and different community members and people that are associated with them. Now, you know, this might be seen as, really? You don't have anything more important to do than ask how's the health of this one and who's that one? Is that one happy? Is it? But these questions of these particular persons who to this point have been fully under the protection and care of Lord Krishna, these are his immediate, you know, associates, it is significant. Because if these personalities who have been under the care and protection of Krishna are no longer comfortable, are no longer satisfied, are no longer at ease, this is indicative that maybe Krishna's protection is no longer there. Therefore, Yudhishthira asks about these individuals over these next handful of verses. We'll hear them. Now, sometimes, particularly in the earlier section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes we would find that Prabhupada would illuminate about different personalities and give a little bio of the background on them, speak about them. And in this case, there are many names that we recognize that are listed over these next few verses, but some that aren't. We'll speak a little bit about these. So in this verse 25, two of the great dynasties of this time period are mentioned, that is the Madhava and the Yadavas, these two dynasties. Now also listed in with these dynasties are the Satpatas and the Andakas, and also the Bhoja, Dasahar, and Arhas. Now, these are the various collections of descendants all in the Bhagavad Purana storyline. The Vrishni dynasty, and then all of these different branches coming down, these are all noted here. Prabhupada mentions in the Krishna book his early presentation of the 10th canto, as he said, because I don't know how long I have. He says there, it appears that in those days, particularly in the western part of India, there were many small kingdoms ruled by the Yadu dynasty, the Andaka dynasty, the Vrishni dynasty, and the Bhoja dynasty. So these smaller kingdoms, although Yudhishthira was the world leader, there were these different kingdoms that worked under his jurisdiction, and these are the personalities that were listed as protecting him. Now, it's interesting to note in the 11th chapter of this canto that these personalities are listed, particularly the Yadu, the Andaka, the Vrishni and Bhoja dynasties, as responsible for protecting Dwarka. In the western part, these dynasties, these kingdoms, if you will, surrounded Dwarka, and so they would be the protection for preventing any onslaught or attack to Dwarka. So therefore, it's completely understandable why, first thing off, Yudhishthira is asking about these dynasties, because they're the gateway to protecting Dwarka. Dwarka is where Krishna and all of his immediate family members are seated. If these dynasties are not there, not well settled and not doing their job, or compromised, as we might say, this could spell great misfortune for Dwarka, for the entire fate of the city of Dwarka. So therefore, this is why Yudhishthira starts off asking about these particular individuals. The fate of Dwarka lies in their hands, one might say. So we'll move on to text 26. Now, there's an interesting note here. The inquiry is made about Suryasena. Now, of course, he's from the Kshatriya caste. And he's one of the originators of the current group of individuals that we're speaking about. And it's interesting that he married a Vaishya girl. And from them was born Nanda Maharaj, who was part Kshatriya, part Vaishya. But he also married a Vaishya girl, who we know by the name of Jasoda. And in this way, the family line branched on that side to Vaishyahood, if you will. Vasudeva, on the other hand, one of the other sons of Suryasena, married into the Kshatriya caste, marrying Devaki and Rohini. And they were both royal princes, so keeping that Kshatriya side of the family line very strong. So this is the pretext of text 26 and why he's asking about Suryasena, because he's concerned about, is this Kshatriya line and their business here again is protecting, is this still strong? All of these questions he's asking, while to the untrained eye or to one who's not familiar with the storyline here, well, he's just asking about various family members. He's really familially interested in his inquiries. It all has a purpose. It all has a connection to the well-being of Dwarka and to everything that's being protected under Krishna's direction. So then we go to text 27, and in this text, Yudhishthira asks about the wives of Vasudeva, or as he's also known, Anakadundabi. There's a name to get at initiation, huh? And your name is Anakadundabi. Excuse me? Anakadundabi. Could you say that again real slowly? Anakad. I actually had that experience with Prabhupada when he gave me my instructions on how to chant Gayatri and do like this, and I didn't get it. He said, no, no, like this, and I didn't get it. He said, like this. I got it. So, I actually know the devotee named Anakadundabi, disciple of Srila Prabhupada, very, very nice devotee. I guess they just call him Anna for short. And maybe, you know, Dundabi, whatever. But anyway, this is another name for Vasudeva. Some people may not be aware of that. And so the wives of Vasudeva are as follows: Devaki, Puravi, Rohini, Bhadra, Madhira, Rochana, and Ila. These are the known wives of Devaki. Now, Devaki, we all know who she is. We all know that storyline quite well. You know, married to her, and Kamsa is so happy he's getting his sister married, and puts him on the chariot. I'm going to humble myself and drive your chariot for you. You know, this is a theme that we're familiar with, taking the humble role of a chariot driver. And, you know, I'm just so happy, let's go to the wedding. And then, of course, the oracle from the sky, you know, her child's going to kill you. What? All right, now I'm going to kill you. Kamsa's such a fickle person. At any rate, so there's, we know that story of Devaki. And then Rohini, you know the story of Rohini, and that story is very well told. Puravi. Puravi is also, her name's actually Rohini. So there were two Rohinis who were the wives of Vasudeva. But that could get a little complicated. No, no, not you, the other Rohini. No, 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 the other Rohini. You know, back and forth like that. I mean, that could actually proof for some fun husband and wife jokes, but anyway. So the second Rohini, her name was given as Puravi. So Puravi's sons were Avagaha and Nandaka. These are two very important characters that we find in the story of the Mahabharata. Then we have the fourth wife, Bhadra. Couldn't find a single thing on her. A lot of Bhadra listed as far as Krishna's wife, Bhadra, but nothing here. And Madhira, likewise, I couldn't find anything on her. I mean, I really went down a rabbit hole on this. I just, like 3.5 hours looking for all this information. And some of these personalities, there's just nothing there on them. Rochana, I was not able to find anything on her. Ila is also known by the name Vrikadevi, and she's the cousin of Garga Rishi, so at least a family connection there. Now, to be fair, this rabbit hole of research I mentioned, there's many, many lists of the various wives of Vasudeva, and some say he had 12 wives and 2 concubines, and some say he had unlimited wives, but we stick with what Prabhupada gives us in the 10th canto, and that's this list of wives that we just mentioned here. Even if we don't have much biographical background on them, this is the list that we have from Srila Prabhupada, so we stick with that one. And don't even get me started on the list of sons and daughters. I mean, you know, this is just unlimited. So then, we come to today's verse at the conclusion of this group of verses, text 28 and 29. I have to admit, it gave me a chuckle to read Kamsa described as mischievous. Really? That's like saying General Custard shot a couple Indians. I mean, Kamsa, mischievous, that's an oxymoron if I've ever heard one. Kamsa was just like, you know, demoniac personified. But at any rate, the word Prabhupada uses here is mischievous for this particular circumstance. And Yudhishthira's not asking about Kamsa. He's not interested in Kamsa. He's asking about Kamsa's dear father. Kamsa's dear father was a devotee of Krishna. And he was in prison for no good reason other than the fact that Kamsa was a big rascal. Now, it's interesting. It's not often noted that Kamsa wasn't Ugrasena's only son. He had 9 sons, Kamsa included, and 5 daughters, 14 children. And just an interesting point, relating to a point made in an earlier class last week, as far as I was mentioning to Sesha, our ability to question but not doubt things we may read. Ugrasena had 10 quadrillion men in his personal bodyguard. That's 1 billion to the 100th power. I'll just let that hang out there for a second. But here's my question. Where were all those bodyguards when Kamsa imprisoned him? You got 10 quadrillion bodyguards. It's not likely somebody's going to throw you in jail. So at any rate, there must be a storyline there that we just don't know. But then in this verse also, we have Ritika and Kritavarna. Ritika is the father of Kritavarna. And from the Srimad Bhagavatam and Mahabharata, Kritavarna is always on the wrong side of everything. I mean, wow. Throughout the Kurukshetra War, he takes part in many, many questionable acts. First of all, he's involved in the killing of Abhimanyu, who was his own student, for starters. So there's certain etiquette in dealing with your student, and this certainly crosses that line. He checks Bhima's advancement on the 14th day of the battle. He defends Jayadratha against Arjuna's attack. And he just plain felt like taking the side of the Kauravas was justified in the end. He actually was aware of Ashvatthama's plan to kill the Pandava children in their sleep and did not protest it. No, wait. These are sleeping kids. You can't go in there. First of all, they're sleeping. Second of all, they're children. You can't do this. No, he knew and like, yeah, that's a good idea. Didn't do anything about it. And he was behind the instigation in the whole Shamataka Jewel debacle. So, not really such a nice guy. But here we see that Yudhishthira is inquiring about him because he is still, you know, involved here. Now, there are some other names mentioned here. Satrajit who, just as a curious point, has another name, and that name is Rtudvaja. I had forgotten it. I didn't remember reading it. I mean, it's there in the Bhagavatam. I must have come across it. But, you know, sometimes we have a devotee that we know with the name, and we're like scratching our head, like, I wonder what that name means. Rtudvaja, it's another name for Satyajit. And he's the father of Satyabhama. And, of course, Satyabhama is well-placed in this whole storyline connected with Dwarka and Krishna's pastimes. And we know that Satyajit was the recipient of the Shamataka jewel due to his worship of Surya. He was a devout worshiper of Surya Dev. And one day he was walking on the beach and Surya, Shamataka jewel, you're such a good devotee. And then, of course, we know the whole story behind that. How his brothers, you know, borrows it for the day. I guess something brothers can do. Hey, I'm going to borrow your Mercedes for the day. I'll bring it back at the end of the night, you know. So he borrows the Shamataka jewel, goes hunting, of course gets attacked by a lion and killed. The lion captures the jewel in his mouth and retreats into a cave, which happens to be the cave of Jambavan, who kills him and keeps the jewel, gives it to his daughter as a plaything, and so on. We know how the story progresses. And then, of course, it's stolen a second time. So, and that brings us to the personality of Akura. Akura is a dear devotee of Krishna. He's one of those individuals caught in the middle during this whole, you know, what's soon to be devastating circumstance. He's obliged to Kamsa by, I guess you could say, alliance or profession, but he's devoted to Krishna. So, you know, we know he's involved in the second part of the stealing of the Shamataka jewel. And, of course, then there's the just pitiful circumstance of him taking Krishna and Balaram away from Braj. I mean, this did not endear him to any of the Brijvasis. Now, if there's one thing in your life you want the Brijvasis to think kindly of you. You want to, I mean, I have friends that are just, I mean, if I can use the word ordinary, just ordinary shopkeepers in Vrindavan. One guy, he's got a little stall, no bigger than this actually, and just sells plastic wares. But somehow or another, we've become close friends over the years. Whenever I go to Vrindavan, we always sit and talk and, you know, share conversation and da 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 da. So, you know, you want the Brajbasis to think kindly of you. Akura? Not on that list. The Brijvasis didn't really think very kindly of him at all because he took Krishna Balaram away. And so they blamed him for that. So here again, you know, but he was a devotee of the Lord. So much so that Krishna Balaram revealed this amazing form to Lord Vishnu to him. And then the other personalities listed in this last verse, these are all the sons of Rohini and the different queens there. So here again, while it looks like family interest, they all have a role to play in the storyline of Dwarka being protected and the entire circumstance being properly in its place. And if they're compromised, this leads to the confirmation in Yudhishthira's noticing of all these different inauspicious things. There are auspicious and inauspicious symptoms. Now, it's said, for instance, at the performance of an Agnihotra, if at the end of that Agnihotra there's a nice light rain, that confirms that the purpose of this Agnihotra will be successful. In our modern age, that may or may not be so true, depending on who the Purohit is and what the circumstances, and if they did it right before a hurricane's coming, whatever. But so these things are there, but if you can confirm them with something balancing that, such as what Yudhishthira is trying to do here, then you know, yes, these things are definitely true. But then we come to the real point of this purport in these last two verses. The prophet says, you cannot make any advancement in spiritual life without the mercy of Balaram. And Balaram comes as Nityananda. Nartam Das Thakur, our famous Vaishnava poet, who Prabhupada was extremely fond of his songs, he says the same thing. One must have the mercy of Nityananda. Recently, I was asked to share the pastimes of the Panihati festival. And this Panihati festival, the whole incident of the Panihati festival centers on Raghunath Das Goswami getting the mercy of Nityananda. And what does he want to do with that mercy? Get the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. Raghunath Das is trying to get to Mahaprabhu, to directly get the blessings of Mahaprabhu, but he's unsuccessful. So then he hears Nityananda is going to be close by. And that when Nityananda is close by, then he goes and surrenders himself to him, because he can approach Nityananda. He's close. Chaitanya is very far away. Spiritually, that can be seen also. Nityananda is very close. Nityananda is delivering the jagais and madhais, as Prabhupada says in this purport. So he approaches Nityananda. Nityananda agrees, yes, very soon you will get the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. And then he adds, and Lord Chaitanya will place you in the care of Sarup Damodar. Sarup Damodar and Govinda. Govinda was the personal servant. Sarup Damodar was the personal secretary of Mahaprabhu. Sarup Damodar arranged everything. Govinda did everything. So he will place you in the care of Sarup Damodar. This is guaranteeing the good fortune of Raghunath Das Goswami, who ultimately, and it's a whole other storyline, but ultimately he does get to Puri, and he stays there for 18 years under the care of Sarup Damodar, the eyes. So this is the whole point of the Panihati festival, of that pastime, is getting the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Now in this purport, Prabhupada speaks about the mercy of Balaram. I have to say that I was hoping when I came today that Balaram would have his club. I have this saying that I concocted. When the club is near, there is no fear. So when Balaram's got his club, you know you're safe. You know? If you're hanging out with a bunch of guys and you know, you get approached by a gang, if one of them's got like the muscles and the stick or whatever, you know, okay, this guy's going to protect us. So Balaram's always protecting the coward boys. He's always protecting his devotees. And when he's got his club, you know he's going to give you protection. You know, that club's used in many different ways. The king of Kalinga found out serious dental work after meeting Balaram and his club. You know? I wonder if they had dental work back then. You just go around the rest of his life with no teeth. I have to overcome him. So, at any rate, when Balaram's club is there, we're completely protected. I was very fortunate to be raised in a temple where we clearly knew the importance of Lord Nityananda. And we clearly understood the necessity of getting the mercy of Lord Nityananda in order to get the mercy of Lord Gauranga. My temple president at the time was very keen on this. He had personal, deep-rooted conviction of this. He had been blessed in this way by Srila Prabhupada, and he shared that with all of us. And those of us that grew up in that environment knew that we had to have the mercy of Lord Nityananda. How it is that to this day I don't have a tattoo of Nityananda somewhere on my body is really a disappointment, but at any rate, Nityananda's blessings are always there and available for the devotee. And this is the avenue, as we see from this Panihati pastime, to getting the blessings of Lord Chaitanya. Of course, Prabhupada takes it a step further and says one can't get the mercy of Nityananda without the blessings of the six Goswamis. And you know, we know that we can't get the blessings of the six Goswamis without the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And in this purport, Prabhupada draws that direct line by pointing out that Nityananda appears as the spiritual master. Balaram appears as the spiritual master. There's a famous lecture in Mumbai in the 70s. Prabhupada quotes that phrase, balahine na. And he says, it's misunderstood that without physical strength, one cannot progress. But he says, no, without the spiritual strength, balahine na, the mercy of Balaram, one cannot progress in spiritual life, because Balaram represents the spiritual master, and the blessings of the spiritual master are essential. Therefore, every day we come to the temple, first thing we do, we offer our obeisances to Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes in history we're able to do full dandavats, sometimes we just have to stand in front of him with folded hands. But we have to make that obeisance. Just as Arjuna came and came before Yudhishthira, offered his obeisance, similarly this is how we show our respect to Srila Prabhupada. Before we do anything, we recite Prabhupada's pranams. After we're finished doing something, we recite Prabhupada's pranams. This is reminding us that the spiritual master is always present in our life. Before we worship the deity, we offer prayers to Srila Prabhupada. We worship Srila Prabhupada first, and then seek his permission. This is the process for respecting the spiritual master. This is the process for getting the blessings of the spiritual master. Because the spiritual master represents Yananda, who is the direct incarnation of Balaram, who, as Prabhupada says here, protects all the devotees. So we all want protection. That's what these eight verses are all about. Questioning whether the protection of the devotees is still intact. The historical circumstance of that is that they were not, because Krishna was leaving the planet. Balaram was leaving the planet. Dwarka was unprotected. Arjuna's, can't save the wives of Krishna from the cowherd, from the rascal cowherd men that attack him. All of these things show that no, the protection of the devotees is no longer intact. We have that opportunity to keep that protection intact by constantly placing ourselves at the lotus feet of our spiritual master, by constantly seeing our connection in our daily activities to the lotus feet of our spiritual master, by constantly meditating on the lotus feet of our spiritual master. Tri Sandhya, this is the point of Gayatri, three times a day, remember the spiritual master, minimum three times a day. This is the goal. So therefore, this last verse with the purport in this series of verses here raises the very important point of seeking shelter and connecting that idea of seeking shelter to the whole presentation of these eight verses, Arjuna, Yudhishthira's questioning. Not just asking about some family members, but why is he asking? Because their situation, all these personality situations, clearly indicates whether the devotees are still safely under the protection of the Lord, or, as all these omens have indicated, the Lord is leaving and therefore ill is about to set upon the entire planet. So, we're all blessed and Yananda appears as a spiritual master, and that spiritual master is our eternal guide through the persons of Srila Prabhupada. So I'll finish there, and just let me finish with a famous saying from our days in St. Louis, read on the bottom, can't do without them. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So if anybody has any questions or corrections, eight verses, probably a lot there, we'll do our best to answer them. If not, we'll just go about our day trying to remember what is here, Srila Prabhupada. All right. Sesha Prabhu.
You mean to say what's red on the bottom can't do without it?
The lotus feet are red on the bottom. Funny story, I've told it a few times. In the St. Louis Temple, because we were so obsessed with the lotus feet, our cook was Radha Damodar. And Radha Damodar had a passionate nature anyway. And he was always, in a frantic mood in the kitchen, cooking for all the boys and all. So Radha Damodar had a little skill. He took some copper wire and made like a little framework out of it that came down, went across, and then had a second piece that had a little loop at the end that hung. And on the bottom of these two pieces extending down, with plaster of Paris, he molded two lotus feet. And in the bottom, he carved the different symbols. And then he painted the top gold and painted the bottom red. And then drilled a little hole in the top where the anchor would be and glued them onto these little, and hung it from the pot rack in the kitchen, just about head height. So when things would get really hectic, he'd walk over there and rub his head back and forth on these lotus feet. So thus the phrase came, right on the bottom, can't do it. We were a little bit weird in St. Louis, what can I say? Yes, she did.
We're saying how in Kali Yuga those family relationships are sort of like, you know, they can be problematic and dysfunctional, or there's distance. And I was just thinking, like, do you think there's a connection between, you know, how Arjuna was offering obeisances to his brother, and in Kali Yuga, there's like no sense of like respect, you know, like Vaishnava culture and like respect among family members, you know? I was just thinking, like, do you think there's a connection?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Kali Yuga parents who are inclined to give eternal shelter to their children, you know, your kids never leave. I mean, they may physically move, but they're always, you know, in your life. There's many devotees that I know of that once they became a Hare Krishna member, their parents cut them off. Well, I have nothing more to do with you. Karmarupa is a classic example of that. Very well-to-do family, but when he became a devotee, that's it. No problem for him. He went to Vrindavan and surrendered to the lotus feet of the cows and went back to Godhead, you know. So, you know, in that sense, yeah. And then what to speak of between family members, you know, there's so many families where there's just horrific history. This is all part of Kali Yuga, you know, part of the degrading circumstances. And we're only at the beginning. I had an individual I know that, not a devotee, but he said to me, he said, we were talking about the way things are right now. He said, in your religion, is there like a Armageddon, like an end of times? I said, oh yeah, definitely. I said, the difference is in our tradition, it's still about 425,000 years away. I said, it's not right around the corner like, you know, many people think. So this is just the beginning of how bad it's gonna get. As they say, you ain't seen nothing yet. So yeah, we know from Bhagavatam, Kali Yuga really progresses, and what we're experiencing now will be seen as practically a golden period compared to what Kali will bring on us. So yeah, even family relations. Prabhupada speaks very strongly about this in many lectures regarding abortion. He says the mother will kill the child in the womb. So the mother's love is the greatest symbol of love. So, you know, there are different examples like this that are pointed as to the degrading qualities of Kali Yuga. Yeah. So we'll finish there. Shrimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Vimalini.